Blog Talk Radio.
Well, happy new year, everybody. We're welcome to the Somewhere in Vegas podcast here on blogtalkradio.com and now on our sister affiliate, Spreaker.com. I am Mark the Q. I am your host. Couple of exciting guests today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, a good friend of mine who's a really great journalist, now an author, Melanie Waxler, so will be on us at the bottom of the hour. Fellow Floridian. She is a life coach. Mm-hmm. She, has her own charity. She's a really great overall person and really just someone that could kind of motivate us to coming into this new year, especially this time of year, because people are saying new year, new you. They want to try to get some stuff done, you know, in terms of their lives, and no better person to start off the new year right with that is Kathleen Miner, also a top selling author as well. How are you doing, Kathleen?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem at all. I mean, it's great to be able to talk to you. Like I said, it's kind of really great timing just to have you on right around this time of year where people are reflecting on their last year and they're kind of, you know, looking to kind mm-hmm. of improve themselves as well. And you have a number one bestseller, the 30-Day Self-Perception Makeover as well. I mean, how's it for people right now, especially just to kind of look over the past year and going into this year and just kind of seeing what needs to be improved in their lives?
Okay. So, you know, first I'll say as far as New Year's resolutions go, I think that they're great. I think it's amazing for people to have goals and envision things, but to remember that it doesn't just have to be around the new year. So these are things that you can do all year long, come up with new desires and new exciting things that you'd like to do. But if you did make a New Year's resolution, and I like to change that and call it a desire, and that's because, well, a few reasons. One, it doesn't put as much pressure on you that, okay, this is a resolution, I have to do it. And another thing is when it's a desire, it's something that you desire to do. It's going to bring you joy and it's going to fulfill you. Instead of resolution tends to have a feeling, and you tell me what you think of this, but as a struggle sometimes, or I'm going to make it through this, right? Like I'm going to get to the gym every day and I'm going to dread it, but I'm going to do it. So I like to just throw that out there to, even if you change the wording of it a little bit, even though I know resolution's been around for, you know, I don't even know how long, forever. But it gives you a different feeling, I feel. And I've also noticed with my clients and friends and family, when they think about it a little bit differently, they come up with different, we can say, quote, resolutions or desires.
Yeah, I've always tried to, but, you know, it's very rare that I ever kind of accomplished it. Last year, I did have a New Year's resolution to be able to get my projects done this year. I had so many things going on my plate that I haven't completed. So finally mm-hmm. this past year, I said, I'm not starting any new projects. I'm getting everything that I need to get done off my plate. So I have a pretty much of a clear slate coming into 2019. And thankful to say I actually got through that. And, you know, the word is desire. I had a desire to kind of get everything kind of completed and off my table. And so in 2019, I could start fresh and try to make some more things happen. But I'm one of those guys that likes multiple projects, and sometimes think, you know, if I have multiple projects and a couple of balls in the air, I don't always get to catch them and have to release them again. So it's, you know how that is.
Oh gosh, I definitely do. And that's another reason why I like to call them desires, but you know, when you do that, because we're creative people, always get a whole lot done and we always have a whole lot on our plate and we always accomplish them. If we look at them in a way that it's something that we enjoy, right? Or something that's going to fulfill us. And so when we write these things down, I love to write these down, the desires or the resolutions, whatever you want to call it, and then have it as something to look back on. But when we write it down as if it's already accomplished and as it's already done. Right? So this is something that you can have a checklist as well, and you can go back. Like you said, you had multiple things on your plate, and the most exciting people do. And then you go back and you feel fulfilled with it. And if it doesn't get done within that 1 year, you still have it written down and you know that you're working on it. You're taking inspired action towards completing those projects. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, kind of going into that, the idea of, you know, how people sometimes have a hard, firm, set goal at a certain time period. And one thing, you know, about that that resolution or desire was the fact that, you know, I mean, I didn't necessarily had a hard, steadfast, you know, thing. I said 2019, I would like to get them done, you know, and get them cleared off by 2019. But it doesn't mean that it has to be done right away. It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be done in a few weeks or a few months. I think a lot of people get in that mindset that there's a certain timeline at which something needs to be accomplished.
Well, exactly. And then what their resolution or their desire and the thing that they'd love to have happen in their life and ends up taking a more of a negative feel because they feel pressured to do it. And, you know, it's a fine line. And that's why I like to talk about inspired action and action, because that's a fine line too. So, you know, the things that you do desire to do and complete in your life, I mean, we have our responsibilities, yes, right? We have to make our bills. We have things that we might have to do sometimes that may not fulfill us, fulfilling those desires. So those resolutions, you know, knowing that you can get those done, but there's not a set timeline for it as long as you're taking inspired action towards those goals. So inspired action is something that you feel you'd love to do, right? You're doing it because your intuition is guiding you there. You feel good about it every time you think about it. And action, just plain action, and I talk about this in my book, The 30-Day Self-Perception Makeover, but just plain action is just, you know, taking action because you have to, or you feel like somebody has said to you, you know, you should do this, that this is what you should do, but you don't feel it's right. And you made a good point that even though you may make a resolution and know that you can carry it through and you're going to take inspired action and get there, there are a lot of people that put a lot of pressure on themselves. And that's what I meant from the very beginning as well, is when you make a resolution or a desire, it should be something that's joyful and fills you when you think about it, not dreadful.
You know, and, you know, they always say that the first steps towards that is kind of hard or whatever, but kind of, you know, just going into making a decision about, you know, well, you know, there's something I really kind of want to do and all that as well. You know, how would somebody, you know, go about that? You know, is it something that should be scary? Should it be something that, you know, it's something where you can try it out and maybe fall on your face a little bit and then, you know, kind of get to the feel and learn a little bit more about that. And maybe it might change the direction of what your desire is.
Oh, absolutely. So if there's something, even if it's a little bit scary, but an exciting scary, you know, there's a difference. And when you feel that excited scary in there, definitely that should be something to try, because not, you know, we don't know what we love until we try different things. And so by doing that, and that's a different feeling, right, than the scary of, oh my gosh, this is going to hurt me. Of course, we're not going to do those. But when you are really afraid of something because it's a change, you know, change is scary. But those are the things that we should be looking to do. And then when we take a look back and we thought, you know, okay, we tried that. And the thing I love about when people take chances of things that might be a little bit scary is that in that process, whether you love what you ended up doing or not, another path opens up, right? Whether you meet somebody that, you know, is just like, oh my gosh, they just told me this and this really resonates with me, or you get a certain phone call, or you go to a place and you visit and you're like, I love it here. I mean, you know, it opens up a whole new door. And even though it may not be that one exact thing that you thought was the thing, you've tried something which led you on the right path. And I think that is one of the biggest benefits of trying new things and things that might be a little bit scary. But yeah, you know, to get people on the right path, I always just, you know, a lot of people don't know what they desire, right? And I think that's why resolutions end up getting a negative sort of tone to them, because they think they know, but they don't really know. So I always like to ask people, what do you not want? What is something you don't want? Because what you do want is the opposite, right? So it's just a good way for the people out there that may not even know. You know, we've asked people before, you know, what is it that you do desire? What do you want? You know, ask them what they don't want and really think about what you don't want. I will say this, though. I want to just mention this really quick because I say the word want, and want is something that I use only in that situation. Because when you, okay, so the universe, right, we're all energy. Everything in this world is energy. And the universe and your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between, you know, what's real and what's not, right? It's what you put out there. It's the energies you put out there. And so when you say want, like I want this, you will keep wanting that, right? That's what you're going to get, is to keep wanting it. And that's why I like to change it to desire. You know, I desire this. And then when you desire something, and you get into that feeling place. So when you get into that feeling place of how exciting it's going to feel, when you do get that desire, you are attracting that desire to you. So you live in that, meaning every, you know, as many times as a day, you can a day get that feeling of that excitement of that thing that you want to try or that scary thing that you want to try. What do you think it's going to feel like? Because feeling, it dictates the energies that you radiate out every single day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's so much pressure to want something or to need something versus, you know, having a passion for something. There's a different kind of mindset in terms of that, you know, the idea of desiring something and working towards that desire versus, you know, being pressured to want that.
Exactly, because, you know, and that's why it's so important to change that thought process. Because wanting and needing it's really a negative energy. So if we want to go with energies here and talk about that, we could be here all day, but I want to, you know, that's the higher, you know, that's something giving you messages, right? So even when you meditate, you might get a message. But when you're wanting and you're needing something, you're putting out there that you're going to keep wanting and needing it. And therefore, there's a negative negativity attached to it. So if you take that same thing and it's something that you truly desire, it changes the whole thought process, right? Like your whole thought process about it. But then again, if you take that and you change it into the word desire and it doesn't really feel great to you, then you need to rethink that. Because that's not a path that's going to make you feel fulfilled.
Well, speaking about that, I mean, was there a moment in your life where that kind of came to you where you had to kind of change your mindset about, you know, what you were doing and, you know, kind of led you down a different path?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, I was I had an eating disorder in high school, and then I got pregnant as a teenager and was very sick with hyperemesis, which is basically, those of you who don't know what that is, it's when you vomit the whole time, and I was in the hospital most of the pregnancy. And, you know, I then started realizing too, I got married and then we got pregnant. There was a divorce. I mean, I will shorten this down for you, but, you know, I realized that the things that were growing in my life were the things that I was paying attention to, whether it was good or not so good. So I started thinking, okay, I'm going to start really paying attention to what my thoughts are and what feelings I attach to them. And then let's see how this goes. So I was making a conscious effort to be sure that when negativity came to my mind, that I was switching it over. And I'm not going to say that there aren't bad days. There's ebbs and flows. That's life, right? That's what gives us contrast. That's why we're here. We're really here to give joy and love and receive joy and love. But we're going to have ups and downs. That's how we know what we desire and what we don't desire, right? That's what leads us on our path. But when you know that you can switch things and you can create the life you desire by doing these changes, then in the big picture, you have like a trick in your back pocket. So for me, that's when I started really paying attention to that. You know, I had a full-time job. I was working 40 plus hours. I was single with two children, you know, and I was lucky to have $5 at the end of the week. So I wanted to still go to the gym. I wanted to be healthy after getting over the eating disorder. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to live a healthy life. And so I started personal training women to make extra money and to have a gym membership. And so what I was doing, I was working on my insides, like we just talked about, and changing the mindset and really focusing on that. But then I started working with my clients on the same thing. And because, you know, it doesn't matter what you look like on the outside, right? In personal training, we're getting a great body. But if you don't feel good on the inside, your outside doesn't matter, right? It really doesn't. You know, somebody could say to you, oh my God, you look amazing. But if you really aren't connected intuitively and you're living more in a negative mindset, you're still not going to be happy. So for me, those little times when I was younger and a pregnant teenager and, you know, and married and sick and divorced and this and that, that's when I started to really pay attention to what I was doing. And then I started noticing that now I'm focusing and changing my thoughts and switching over statements. And these things that the phone calls would come in, right? The right people were being placed in my life. I was ending up at the right places. And it was not coincidence. It was because I was attracting that to me. I was surrounding myself with friends that were truly authentic and cared, you know, and not just because. So, and like I said, there's ebbs and flows in everybody's life. So that's just one particular time. But, you know, there's times, you know, when you're sick again. I have four children. I had hyperemesis each time. Oh my gosh, there's just so many times that everybody has ebbs and flows. And by knowing that when you're on that down, the only way to go is up and you know how to get there, that's huge, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, you know, I've come to cope with that just by the fact that, you know, I know that I'm going to have bad days, but with that in mind, you know, whatever problems that come in front of me, then I know that there's going to be some kind of solution. And I think that's another way to kind of look at it. It's like you have a hurdle in front of you, but you can always jump over it. You can go under it. You can go around it. Figure out a way to kind of, you know, manipulate your life, or, you know, that somehow that doesn't become as big a problem as it is, I think is a great way to approach it. Yeah,
I guess solution-based approach, like which is what you're saying, which is awesome that you do that. Because if more people did that, instead of looking at what could go wrong, then let's look about what can we do to feel right about it? What can we do to make it right? Right?
And more importantly, you know, if there's a problem, you know, you may come out of it with a lot more than just maybe the knowledge of a solution. Maybe you come into another direction where, you know, you could find out where to help out, or you could figure out, you know, something that you do. I mean, very, very similar to, I mean, the charity that you do, I mean, obviously, the Helping Handbag thing is a situation where, you know, maybe you saw a problem and you're looking for a solution in terms of it as well. I mean, it's a kind of a great thing to kind of, you know, motivate you to be able to do something better for this world.
Oh, yeah. So let me just mention that for a minute. So it's called Helping Handbags USA, and I'm the founder and president in the United States. A friend of mine, Brenda, does this over in the United Kingdom. And for me, helping in this sort of a way to give hope, right? So never underestimate the power of hope. These are once loved handbags that we fill with necessities, and we coordinate with the directors at the homeless shelters and the abuse shelters and find out what they need in those handbags. And then we donate those handbags to those shelters, and we give them to the women that are getting back on their feet again. And some of these women are staying in the shelters with their families, you know, with their children. And it's just the looks on their faces, you know, it helps them to realize that, you know, somebody does care. And we all can't do everything, but by each of us doing what we can do, each little bit helps, right? So, you know, and for me, being a single mom of two and barely, you know, barely making ends meet, I know how it feels. And I even had amazing parents, you know. I had a job. You know, I was working three jobs actually when I was still only had $5 left. It's pretty expensive to live, you know, and have children and health insurance. And but I look at these women, and if I could help in any way, because they don't have anybody, they're staying in the shelter. So I can't imagine what it feels like to really not have anybody. So what we also do is, so these women are in programs, most of them, where they're going out, getting back on their feet again, getting jobs so they can get back on their own. And we put little cards in there, not only uplifting cards with little messages that are handwritten, but we put little cards about interview questions right? So like the top 10 interview questions that are typical that you'll be asked, so that they can look at them and really think about it, because before they go in, and it gives them some tips, you know, on dressing and things of that nature. But especially the women in the abuse shelters, they most of them don't have a job. They haven't worked in a long time, if they have worked at all, because that's, you know, part of that whole situation, depending on their situation. But so that was what I could do. So I was super excited when I found out about that. And my friend Brenda talked to me about it. And I thought, you know, this, we can cater this to the United States, because every country is different, right? Every country and what they need. But we are spreading it out through the USA right now. We got our 501c3 from the IRS about 3 months ago. So I was super excited because I could now spread it outside of Florida. So if anybody's listening and would like to start this in their area, just, oh my gosh, you know, you can go to my website, kathleenminer.com, and I can, you can send me, you know, contact me, and I can help get it set up in your area. It's just, that's my way of giving back from things that I've been through. And like I said, if all of us just does a little bit, then we can help.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have that distinction, just so you can help so many more women out there. I mean, it's not just a Florida problem. There's California, there's Vegas, there's
everywhere
across the country, you know. So, this is something
definitely.
That could probably get a lot of women motivated to help out in terms of that as well. I mean, I know a few people that desire to want to help more people and all that as well. So, it'd be interesting to see if
and
we can get some more people to help do the job.
Oh, my gosh, that would be awesome. And you know what, woman? Most of us women have handbags that are still in amazing shape, and we just don't use them anymore. We just don't. So, you know, it's awesome. And we are, you know, if we have – so if somebody donates, we've gotten some – I'm going to say, quote, man bags, but it could be anything, and they're really nice. What we do is we don't turn anything away. We will still take them, fill them, and we give those as well to the men, because there are men in the – shelters as well, obviously. So we also take, if you want to call them man bags, or you can still call them handbags, whatever, but you know, some that are more catered, and then some are more flimsy. So sometimes people will donate something that's more conducive to somebody that's actually living on the street, right? Because they can shove it in something. And we'll also fill those and get those to the appropriate people as well. But for the most, our biggest thing that we do is we take the gently used, once loved handbags and we fill them. And these women, they take them on interviews. They, you know, it's like when you get it, you know, you get something new to you and you just feel like $1 million. And that's what we're doing, is giving hope and spreading hope. And also what we do is we have helping haircuts, and we hairdressers, depending on the area, they donate their time to give haircuts as well to the men and women in the homeless shelters once a month to give them a great self-perception.
Go ahead.
Yeah, to give them a great self-perception, because, you know, like my book, The 30-Day Self-Perception Makeover, it's all about a healthy self-perception, because our self-perception is what radiates out into the world every day, right? What you think of yourself when you walk outside or you look in the mirror, that's the energy vibe that you're putting out. So self-perception is huge, and you know, the book talks all about that. It's 30 days. You go through 30 days, and I guarantee you, if you do it, you will have a totally different self-perception about yourself, and you'll start to see things change. You'll start to see your entire world open up. You may have friends that venture away a little bit, but that's, you know, that's the universe doing you a favor, universe, God, whatever you resonate with, you know, doing you a favor. But then you'll have some amazing people come in as well. But what I was getting at with the self-perception too, as far as the homeless goes, is these purses and bags and the haircuts, it helps them to feel better about themselves, their selves. And they walk, they just have the biggest smiles on their faces, and we have the best conversations. These are some amazing people most of these people have just fallen on hard times. And we've all fallen on hard times before, right? It's just everybody's hard time is just different.
Yeah, you know, and it's great to be able to see that, and just to be able to have a job and have money coming in to be able to help you get back on your feet is a huge thing too. It's a huge deal. It's something that it boosts you up as well, and you get you in a better position, and that stress gets off of you as well. So it's great to be able to see that as well. I'll be interested to see how much you expand this year. We'll have to come back and update everybody. Hopefully,
I would absolutely love that.
Year and, So let's get some of the plugs out of the way. First of all, you can get the book pretty much everywhere you could get your ebooks or anything like that. I'm assuming like Amazon, et cetera.
I have it on a hardcover, and it's getting ready to get into the bigger bookstores. So you should be able to find it anywhere. But it's definitely available on my website and Amazon.
Yeah, and then you guys can check out all of her social media and all that. Kathleen Miner, that comes at Miner.
And Kathleen spelled.
Yeah. I just want to make sure everybody gets the right
so
as well. And you guys can check that out as well. And then you have a new show. You have a new show out now, right?
I do. I have a radio show, and it's called Manifesting Magic with Kathleen, and you can stream live from it anywhere on saintaugustineradio.com every Wednesday evening, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then that is also on my website, which if you miss the episode, you can go and you can listen to it that way as well. So also if you want 80s music, we play some awesome 80s music then.
Yeah, I love my 80s music too. So yeah, I'll have to definitely check that out as well. I mean, it's great. I mean, just a little bit about the show. What do you guys talk about on the show, and what's all about?
Okay. Yeah. Well, what we do is it's all about manifesting the life that you desire. So we interview a lot of people that have just created their life on purpose, right? Because that's what it's all about. Because we all manifest, which is another word I like to say about manifesting, is it either be magnetized or create. They're all mean the same thing. And we're all creating our life every single day. So why not create it and manifest it on purpose? So we interview people who have done that, and how have they done that, coming from all different areas. And then we give some tips, tricks, you know, how to do that. We have call-ins where you can call in and ask a question and or email it to me ahead of time. So if anybody has any questions they'd like answered, they can email it to me and I can answer them on the show. And then we play some great 80s dance music because, you know, I graduated high school in 1990. I love to dance. I'm one of those, like, really great singers in the car and dancers if I put on some good music. And so we play some great 80s dance music as well.
Yeah, side note, I was in Florida. When I was living in Florida, I actually did karaoke DJ. It's one of my favorite jobs I've ever done. And it was a fun job.
Oh my god, I used to love to do karaoke. It's something I probably should pick up again.
Yeah.
When you're a car singer, that's the best thing to do.
Well, definitely. If you come out here to Vegas, we'll have to go karaoke then.
Oh my gosh, that is for sure. I will definitely be in touch because I actually and might be out there next month. So.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We'll definitely catch up. And I definitely want to keep up with you just for the charity and all that as well. And we could be talking for hours.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that sounds awesome. And I appreciate you spreading the word about helping Handbags USA. We want to get this all over so we can just start give a little bit of hope. We can all give that little spark of hope because the power of hope is absolutely amazing. We all know because we've all had that in our life at one point or another where just a little bit of hope has gotten us over a hurdle.
Well, definitely. And Kathleen, like I said, we'll keep in touch. I definitely want to get back with you sometime during this year and kind of get an update on that as well. And best of luck with helping Handbags USA and definitely your book. I wholly hope it continues to be highly successful for you. Maybe are we expecting a new book from you?
Yes, actually, we have the 30-day self-perception makeover teen version coming out. So, you know, it's all about our self-perception, and boy, do we ever need it when we start in the middle school and high school, right? So the teen version will be out by March, and then we have the journaling for the life that you desire coming, but that will be after the teen version. These are all things that I've been working on or that are almost complete. So,
we'll definitely have you back before the teen version comes out then.
That sounds awesome.
Okay.
Thank you so much
Kathleen,
for having
for
me.
Time,
it's been a pleasure.
We'll
have a great rest
soon.
Of the day. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye. That was Kathleen Miner, everybody. You guys can check out her book right now. It is the 30-day self-perception makeover where you can make it everywhere as well. I accidentally dropped Melanie, I'm sorry about that. She's calling back in. I'm sorry about that, Melanie. I didn't mean to drop you. I was trying to drop Kathleen on the air. But let me give you a formal induction before I put you on the air. Melanie Waxler Snow, she was a very decorated news reporter for many years, and now she is supporting her the next generation journalist as dean of her college of journalism. She's an associate dean, I should say. She's also pursued her passion with her first new fiction novel, Muse, which will be released this week. She's a really good friend of mine. We've worked together for many, many years, actually up in Indiana. Now she's out of Florida. She's making waves right now. How you doing, Melanie?
Hi, Mark. It's good to talk to you again. I guess I haven't seen you since Terre Haute, Indiana, first TV job. And we worked together on several interesting stories there in the Wabash Valley. So it was really great to get to work with you. But yeah, since then I went through several other TV markets and have landed eventually in the Tampa Bay market and continued reporting here and left TV and then became a spokesperson for a law enforcement agency, which I did for about 6.5 years. And I just recently started working for a college here in Tampa Bay as the associate dean for the communications and marketing department. So a big change from TV to law enforcement to higher education. A little bit of whiplash there, but definitely been fun.
Yeah, I think we just missed each other because I think when you were moving down there, I was moving out here to Vegas. And, I was doing the news thing out here for a little while, and then I got kind of got burnt out on it and went into other things, including podcasting. So me and Mel were basically, we were pretty solid when we were doing the night shift over in Indiana when I was out there living for a while. But, it's great to be able to dive into, kind of some of the things that you've been doing since. We've been following each other on Facebook for a while now, and just to see what everybody's doing, all that as well. But it's been interesting to see how the career kind of stays through.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that was always a primary goal for me. I mean, even from the time I was a child, was to get a novel published. In fact, I remember telling my dad, I want to do two things when I grow up. I want to be on TV as a reporter, and I want to write books. And so I'm very fortunate to say that I've been able to do both. And my first novel is officially going to be released in 3 days on the 16th. It's a love story called Muse, and it is published through the Wild Rose Press. And I have two other books that are finished and kind of hanging out, waiting on, what their future might hold. Another one will be with the Wild Rose Press, I'm hoping. So, it's exciting. I've already had a lot of pre-orders. And typically love stories, that's not something that I write. I mean, especially working in television, I was more of a crime beat reporter. And this story manifested itself over a period of years. And then toward the end of 2016, I want to say it was probably around September, I just sat down and started writing it. And 3 months later, I had a book. and it was a love story. And I kind of stepped back from it for a moment and was like, oh, wait, I just wrote a novel. And it's story. And so now what? So then becomes the next question of how do I get it out there? Do I want to even try? And I queried and sent to literary agents and publishers, all the things that you try to do when you're trying to get your book published, and was very fortunate when the Wild Rose Press put their faith in me to put my book out into the world.
Yeah, I know for me as I even write movies. I write my movies on another one of my big projects I usually do. When I manifest a storyline or whatever, it sometimes has a tendency to change. It has a tendency to morph because if after years you may, gain a little bit more experience, or you have a thought, random thought that, oh, why don't we go in this direction in terms of the story, or maybe this certain incident happens within a story that makes it, make it a little bit more interesting, or make it a little bit more make the character a little bit more deep. Was that something that happened with Muse since you've done it over, you know, had the idea for over a couple of years?
I would definitely say it went through an evolution. It started out as a concept, an idea, definitely inspired by, you know, real things that have happened in my life, but also at the same time, it's a fiction novel. So I'm inspired by random things, and then I find myself just writing down what they mean to me, how they make me feel, and I just start to collect those pieces. And that's sort of my process. I may, you know, see, I'm from East Tennessee originally, so I'm very inspired by the mountains. So if I'm there, I may find myself looking out, you know, over the Smokies, and maybe just the way the fog is hovering over the mountains, that particular moment just grabs me. And then the next thing I know, I've knocked out 3,000 words on it. So it's a very organic thing for me. It's a very natural thing. And I really, really am proud of this book, and I believe a lot of people will find that they relate to it more than I think I anticipated when I first wrote it. And I've already had several people that have read it early on with pre-orders that have come up to me and described a similar situation that's happened to them, where the one that got away ends up being the one. And it's a common trope in literature, but it's also something that really happens in real life. And I think there's always that question for some people, did I make the right decision by letting that person go or by walking away from that relationship? And what kind of life would I have if I had made a different choice? So that's the question this book analyzes. And I think that's what people are going to get out of it is, you know, asking that same question of themselves, and if they haven't asked it before. And of course it is a love story, so there's the love story element, but being a TV reporter, I had to of course incorporate a little bit of that as well, and some crime elements too, because all of those things I think factor into creating a full story.
You know, I think there's a little bit more of desire nowadays just to have the idea of reading. It's kind of an interesting because the fact that now that hardcovers are kind of out, but there is sometimes just a desire to just want to read, you know, read a especially a romance nowadays. It seems like it's making a comeback. There was for a while there, I don't think having a romantic book was really that much of a, you know, it kind of went down for a little while. And then now it seems to be coming back again where, you know, they want to sit down and kind of read, you know, read a romantic tale or something like that as well. I mean, are you seeing the same thing right now?
Yeah, and that's the thing that I'm noticing here just within my own community and with I have a book club here in my neighborhood, actually, and it's the book of the month for February. And so a lot of the women and some men in the book club have already read my book and given their reaction to it. And romance is always going to exist. I'm a big fan of Westerns. I think Westerns for me are the best romance stories because they have everything. They have, of course, there's always a love story component for the most part. There's, you know, gun battles in the street. There's people drinking whiskey in bars. There's horses. There's great guitar music generally. So all of those things I think are romantic. And so to be able to take an element of that and turn it into a tangible thing that someone can hold and read, and it's a wonderful feeling, and it's also a very frightening feeling too, because I never thought the book would leave my laptop, to be honest with you, and to see, I walked out of my house the other day and I saw a neighbor walking with my book down the street, and I thought, oh, that's odd. I never thought I would see that in my life, but. And yet there it was. But yeah, romance it has its place. And I think there's different levels of what, you know, a romance can be. I know, obviously, books like 50 Shades of Grey, hugely popular. This book is not like that. It definitely gets more to the core of desire and want, but then questioning decisions and life choices.
Yeah, another thing, too, is the fact that you know, you have two books right now that you said that you're kind of in the wings, you know, waiting to see what kind of decisions are going to be made. Is that a little less pressure for you if this ends up becoming successful?
If Muse has some level of success, which I hope for me, my main hope is that someone reads this book and feels a connection to it in some way. That's my primary objective. And if there is some level of success that's achieved that allows maybe, you know, for Melanie Snow, my name, to get picked up by a literary agent who may be interested in other things that I've written, that's the long-term goal. I have another novel that I've been working on that it has a romance component but is more crime, and then I have the other one that I mentioned, and it's completed, and it's about a serial killer. So I genre hop a little bit. I don't have one particular type of thing that I prefer writing more than another thing. I just write, and whatever comes out, and it's exciting to sometimes see what comes out of my own head, and sometimes it's a little terrifying. Like with the serial killer stuff, my master's degree is in behavioral criminal psychology, and while I was getting my master's degree, I had to write a lot of papers about serial killers, and Ted Bundy was one that just, you know, was a reoccurring element of that. So I was very inspired by, you know, these reports and papers that I had to write on these people and their behavior and the way they would think. And so that novel is finished, and it's just sitting in my laptop, basically. I've sent it out to a few different places, but I haven't really tried to push it that much. It's not being a love story, it doesn't fall under the Wild Rose Press as much. They tend to focus more on things with the love story component. So my serial killer book will have to wait in the wings for a while, but in the meantime, I'm excited about Muse and just really want to see what people think about it. I'm really curious to hear how people feel about it and what they feel after they read it.
Yeah, you know, what were some of the things that you probably read when you were younger?
Oh, I read everything. The back of a shampoo bottle, if it was near me, I would read that. I'm a huge fan of I went through a very big sci-fi phase and fantasy phase. Of course, I loved Tolkien and C.S. Lewis but I also love the classics. I was a bit of a literature nerd, and I'm very, very proud of that. So when, you know, some classmates may have been reading the Cliff Notes, I was the one that was devouring The Scarlet Letter, or, I'm a big fan of Proust. I love Marcel Proust. I could read Proust all day. I love Hemingway. I love F. Scott Fitzgerald. I could go on and on. Shakespeare was one of my most favorite things in the world to read in high school, and then into college, and then just on my own. I was very fortunate. I got to go to England a couple of months ago and go to see Shakespeare's house in Stratford, and that was a huge moment for me. And in fact, my next novel that will be hopefully with the Wild Rose Press, it takes place in England. So that was a very inspiring trip, and took notes the entire time I was there, and just was able to document so many things to help create what will be hopefully the next, you know, element of my story.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, it's kind of interesting just to kind of, you know, linger back to some of the older stuff. And, you know, as much as people think that older stories probably won't relate to them, a lot of them actually do kind of relate to what we're going through, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you know. So, you know, it's always nice to go back and kind of read some of the old stuff, as were some of the classic novels as well. So, and it's interesting. I mean, you know, a lot of us in high school had to read certain things, and maybe some Hemingway, maybe some. Trying to think of who wrote Great to Wrath, but yeah, there's a lot of people that it kind of had to, you know, kind of had to read and kind of interpret what's going on at those points in time. And it's sometimes it's a chore, sometimes it's not. Sometimes some of those books kind of even ring very hard to you, you know, that you could really heavily relate to as well. I mean, was there ever a book that kind of you read that kind of
kind of rang really kind of true towards you, or you happened to, happen to like that really kind of like that spoke out to you?
Well, I grew up near Knoxville, Tennessee. So I remember being assigned A Death in the Family by James Agee, and it's very depressing. I mean, the title alone tells you that there's going to be a death in a family. So, going in that it's going to be probably not the most upbeat story. But I fell completely in love with James Agee's writing. And I think I read that book probably 20 times before I graduated high school. And then I was able to pick up a copy of Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, and which was another work of his. And I think James Agee's writing really spoke to me. A Death in the Family actually takes place in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so there was, the hometown element. And I always felt like the way he writes, or he wrote, just it captured my soul a little bit and touched my heart. I would say there's a lot of authors that I've felt extremely attracted to, and then I go back and I keep discovering something new when I read them. Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, it was a favorite. I probably, again, read that one a million times. A Farewell to Arms. But F. Scott Fitzgerald, I'm a big fan of his, and I know the go-to book is The Great Gatsby because it's a great book. But I think Tender as the Night is it's a phenomenal piece of work. And if you haven't read Tender as the Night by F. Scott Fitzgerald, I can't recommend that one enough. It addresses so many issues, mental illness, but at the same time, it's this beautiful love story. And it's definitely one of my favorites. So I'm inspired by a lot of authors, and I keep them all surrounding me. My office is filled with books, and just being in a room surrounded by books is the happiest place I can imagine being, except maybe a room surrounded by guitars, because I equally feel the same love for music. My dad's a musician and would write his own songs, and so writing's in my blood. My father spent a lot of time writing, and I think I was fortunate to get a little bit of that DNA.
Yeah, I mean, I would be remiss not to ask you about the idea that, if you were to cast, your characters in Muse, was there any certain actors that pop up that you would love to see take on some of the roles?
Oh, wow. That's something that I did think about several times when writing the book. I'm a huge fan of Emma Stone. I think she's a fabulous actress. And there's some actors out there that, as far as the main male character, I don't think I've identified anyone that has stood out to me to be Alex. But I don't know. It's a good question. I'd have to think about it. I mean, that's kind of the dream, right? Is that something that you write becomes potentially a visual thing as well, and it, maybe makes it to Netflix or becomes a movie. So those are things that you think about. And I probably did have a list at some point of who my favorite actors or actresses would be to be in this if it ever became something like that. But I don't know. I'd have to think about that one, Mark. I never really thought this book would get published in the first place. I'm just so excited that it's here. I mean, I've got a copy of it in front of me now, and I still can't believe that it's a tangible thing. So, I'll think about that. Maybe you read the book and you can tell me who you think, because I know movies are – that's something that you've always been very passionate about.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I could probably tell you as I read it who I think
I'm
it
sure
should
you
be.
Could.
But, yeah, but,
you have a full cast list for me.
Yeah. We've both been in the news business for so long. I mean, and then we both got out, basically. Now you're an associate dean out there at the college. I mean, what's been like for you to kind of see the change in terms of how news has changed? I mean, when we were doing it, I don't think even Facebook was hardly even a huge thing at the time. The internet was there, but there's just so much, so much going on in terms of where the news has come since then, where newspapers have gone, where, you know, kind of some people even argue about the kind of the journalistic ethics and some of the stuff that we learned going through the process has kind of changed a little bit. I mean, you know, just you as an associate dean and, you know, and having seen, you know, been an experienced reporter, I mean, what's been your opinion so far about how news has changed over the past 5-10 years?
Well, I will say first the positive thing. So I believe the sense of urgency to get stories out there now, obviously, it's faster than ever. So we have social media. So when something happens, the information is immediate. But with that comes a huge responsibility. And I do believe a lot of news organizations, they work so hard to be first, and sometimes accuracy takes a backseat. I know there are a lot of good journalists out there that work very hard every day and try to tell a fair story. But news has changed, and with that, the newsroom dynamic has changed, and the amount of work that a reporter has to do now, it's almost insane. I mean, not only are they all pretty much shooting their own stories, but they're also having to do multiple versions of the story. So they'll have the web content, they'll have the social media elements, everything's live. I mean, everyone has a phone that is, you know, running a Facebook Live or some type of live streaming. When I was working, after I left news and went to work for the sheriff's office, that was always one of my biggest concerns is journalists having their phones just live streaming everything. So things that normally would not have been broadcast on television before, things that we would have made the ethical choice to say, okay, you know what, this is probably not something that's going to enhance the story. This is something that probably shouldn't be seen. We're in a different time now, and it's almost a bit late to address that because it's out there. And then there's the whole citizen journalist thing where anyone can be a reporter and take their phone out there and start shooting a crime scene. And I would experience that when I was a public information officer in law enforcement. And as a PIO, you know, my job was to try to protect the deputies working the scene, try to protect the sheriff and ensure that he was ready to go out and speak about whatever incident had occurred, and to make sure the media still got what they needed. But then you would have, you know, a regular person who lived in that community who was already doing his own Facebook Live, giving details, pertinent information about a case or an active investigation that not only could have compromised the investigation, but it's like personal. There's the line has been crossed, and it's we're so far past the line now that journalism, in its original form, has changed. I don't think that it's true journalism is gone. I do still see amazing elements at CBS this morning, every Sunday, still deliver some of the most amazing news I think I'll ever see in my life. I mean, they're amazing stories. They're well put together. They're thorough. They're total stories about a person or a thing that's happened. And so I find myself turning to that more. I hate seeing newspaper falling away. I was always a fan of reading newspapers growing up. I was, you know, it was great to have that tangible thing to hold and to read. But at the same time, getting that information before having to wait until the next day is kind of nice. So it's an evolving thing. And I think newsrooms are trying to keep up with the way things are changing, and it's very difficult for everyone to try to be ethical. I think the ethical question is always going to arise, and especially now with the phrase fake news being tossed about, you know, and there are, you know, elements of that out there, but I truly believe in my heart that the majority of journalists out there are still trying to do what is right, and that is to exercise our First Amendment and to tell the stories that need to be told, be it a local story that impacts a small community or something much, much bigger. And we need to support our journalists. We need to support the storytellers. We need to support the people that are out there in the trenches knocking on doors. And I've done it where you have to go into some communities that are terrifying and knock on the door of someone who's just lost a child or who whose child has been kidnapped, and then try to get them to go on camera. That takes a lot to be able to do that, and it's an emotional experience. I do miss the storytelling part of being a TV reporter. I can't say that I would want to go back to it in the way that TV is now. But having said that, I support all of my TV friends. I want them to continue to fight the fight and do what's out there and what's right and to serve the public, because that's what journalism is for. It's to be that fourth branch of government, the fact checkers, the checks and balances. So, but working at a college is very, very different. and I love it. I love seeing students come in and you know, they're excited. They're starting their life. You know, they're beginning those early choices that we all made. And where am I going to go? What do I want to do with my life? And I love seeing their faces light up when they're talking about a class that they like. It's an exciting change. I've been doing it 6 months now, and in 6 months, I got to tell you, not being on call and being called out at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to a homicide scene or some other tragic event, it's not so bad. It's kind of nice, actually.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind it either. You know, I mean, I kind of went in a slightly different direction and went to documentary filmmaking, and you know, I love just learning, you know, things and having the pressure of having to turn in a story, you know, that night or, you know, by a certain time. I like the fact that I can take time, I can get research done. I can add when I can, you know, I mean, my new project right now is, you know, it's up for a film festival. Hopefully this week I'll be hearing it officially if it's going to be accepted.
Oh, congratulations.
But,
that's fantastic.
Thank you. But it was a fun thing. I mean, it was a year project. It was one something that happened over a year. And it was interesting, and it kind of morphed into something a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. But it was just absolutely amazing just to have that time to be able to process that information. And I think that's why a lot of the documentaries right now are kind of are starting to become very popular. It's just the fact that, you know, they take time to kind of do some research and kind of tell the full story. And sometimes with the news, you just cannot tell the full story in one night. You have to wait until things kind of go through the process and see how everything kind of ends up happening. So, you know,
that's why I love documentaries. It's the exact reason because I got sucked into the documentary section on Netflix, and I think I was stuck there for about a week. I couldn't get away. Because I love seeing something that's thorough, and again, that's you don't get that opportunity in TV news. You have to fit an entire story or as much as you can, or the elements that are required of you by your news managers or whatever producer that you're working with. You have to fit it in a minute and a half, sometimes less, and that's not enough time for something. Some things you need a little more time to really explore what the depth of the story can be and allow people their chance to talk a little bit more about how things impact them. And so for me to go from that to be able to write books, it's a natural progression, because now I can, if something is interesting to me or I find something that's fascinating or inspiring, I can write 90,000 words or more about it. I don't have to spend a minute and a half trying to encapsulate it into just this tiny thing. And I like the freedom of that. It's a good feeling. And the same for documentaries. Any time that you can really explore something more deeply, I think it's a good thing. And it allows people to really see the total picture, the big picture, as opposed to just a few seconds of it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's great to be able to meet all the people that were a part of my documentary as well. I mean, that's the thing, too. I mean, you get to meet so many different people, you know, from all different walks of life, and you get to understand that a little bit better, which is really, really nice, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see, you know, I think the best sum it up is the fact that we got some really great experiences from news, and that kind of morphed into what we're doing now. There were, you know, some elements that we didn't like. There's some elements we did like, but it just wound up that we all ended up where we wanted to be. But we took a lot from what we had learned in the news business. So it's great to be able to be able to see that as well. So,
For sure. Not a day goes by when I don't feel lucky for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and all the stuff that I've learned from reporters like yourself and a lot of the reporters I've worked with throughout the years, you know, and in terms of, you know, how they handled the story or journalism or all that as well. So, it's been great to be able to meet such great people, especially people like yourself, where we were, on the night beat. So we would, always have dinner and we'd always talk about, you know, some of the stuff that we needed to discuss, both professionally and personally and all that as well. So it was great to still be your friend after all these years as well. So it's great to be able to do that. I don't know.
I love keeping in touch with you too, Mark.
Yeah. Now, like I said, Muse is coming out in 3 days on January 16th. You guys can check it out, as well. And Melanie does have a Facebook author page right now, so you guys can check that out as well.
Author Melanie Snow. So yeah, definitely go to my Facebook page now and like the page, and you can read some excerpts from the book and see if it's something that you would find interesting enough to purchase. And it's available on Amazon and on the wildrosepress.com, their website. So yeah, it's out there. It's out in the world now, and I would love to hear what people think about it, but check out my Facebook page. That way, right away, you can at least get an idea of, get a taste for the book and read some of the excerpts that I put there.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Like I said, you know, it might be a nice, good midwinter read, or if you're in the southern part of the United States, you know, maybe you're actually outside. You can know that as well. And you can follow Melanie on Twitter at @msnowwaxler as well, if you guys want to comment about the book there as well. So make sure you guys definitely check that as well. Anything else going on, Melanie?
I mean, other than, you know, starting my doctoral degree last week, and working this new job and raising two kids, and I don't know. I stay pretty busy. I think I burn the candle at every end, and that's fine. And I like it that way. I love working and I love to stay busy. I, you know, personally, outside of all these other things, if I'm not taking care of my boys or at work, I'm usually at the CrossFit gym. I become a little addicted to CrossFit in the last few years. So I enjoy lifting heavy things. Or you'll see me at a bookstore with coffee. I'm very obsessed with coffee consumption. I think it might be a problem, but I'm not going to call it that.
Well, okay. Well, that's great to hear. I don't know if I'll ever be in Florida anytime soon, although, I don't know. You never know. But if you ever head my direction, you know, we definitely need to catch up a little bit more often. And, you know, like I said, again, absolute pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you,
best of luck with the new book. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mark. Take care of yourself.
Will do. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Melanie Snow, everybody, you guys check out her new book. And definitely Melanie Small Author on Facebook. You guys can comment about her new book, Muse. You guys can check it out in a couple days. A couple copies seem to be out right now, so make sure you guys check that out as well. We'll have a show next week, probably 3 p.m. and 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We'll let you know who the guests are then. And then the following week, I'm probably going to be traveling. I'm going to be coming back from Phoenix, but I'll try to – maybe I'll have a couple interviews that will be pre-tape. If we do that, then what we can do is we'll post those up on the – podcast probably on Monday. Just be out on the lookout for that. I'll let you guys know. Usually when I'm on trips like this, it usually means that I'll get some interviews on the fly like I did when I was in Colorado Springs. So make sure you guys check that out as well. Check us out on Twitter @SWIV, and Somewhere in Vegas on Facebook as well. Like I said, we're on Spreaker Radio now. You guys, if you have iHeartRadio, you can listen to it to the podcast now there as well. As well as, you can also ask Alexa to be able to play this podcast as well.
So you guys can go and talk that as well. We're pretty much on most of the sound podcast catchers now as well. And anything that, you know, you can talk to, you can pretty much just say you want to listen to Somewhere in Vegas and you'll be able to do that. So please go ahead and follow us real quick and all that as well. Like I said, our new partners with Spreaker, I think right now Blog Talk's still going alive and running. So until things change, if they shut down the website or shut down the version, like I said, personally, I love this software. The software is absolutely perfect for what, well, I don't say software, I should say the website works very perfectly for what I usually do in the past 11 years, but we'll see what kind of goes there. I can tell you that the Wombat Sports Podcast will most likely start not next week, but the week after, probably. And it'll be more of an on-the-fly situation because I'll be interviewing fighters and I'll be using the Spreaker app for that. So it won't be on the Blog Talk Radio app as much as it will be on Spreaker. So definitely check that out as well. Cincy Sessions probably won't be official until the late spring. So we'll let you guys know and we'll give you some clues on that as well. Like I said, we'll be back next week, regular time, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We'll let you know who the guests are this coming week. And then the following week, we won't have a live show, but we will have some interviews posted on that as well. So definitely check us out, like I said, on our social media, and we'll take care of that as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys next week. Again, 3 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. You heard it several times, so you know what time. And we'll talk to you guys then.